Inside Lacrosse Podcast.
Okay, welcome to this special edition, I guess you consider, of an Inside Lacrosse Podcast. I'm Zach Babbo. I'm talking with Bryant University head coach Mike Pressler. Coach Pressler led Team USA in 2010 when they won gold medal at the World Games in Manchester, England, with tryouts at Goucher over Labor Day weekend for a chance to make the 2014 team that'll compete in Denver. We wanted to talk to Pressler about how he chose his 2010 squad. Make sure to follow Inside Lacrosse on Twitter and go to InsideLacrosse.com all weekend for full coverage of the tryout process. Also, check out the upcoming October issue of the magazine, which focuses on the formation of Team Iroquois and Team Canada, plus some bonus content for our digital subscribers about Team USA. Thank you for joining me today, Coach Pressler. Let's pick this up before the tryout process even begins. So before anybody gets to campus, Coach, you guys have to kind of just whittle down the list of who gets the invite in the first place. I guess I almost wanted to start there. I mean, as the coach of Team USA, you know, how did you approach trying to cull that list down to roughly, you know, the 90 or so guys that get the invite to come out to camp? For you, it was up in Bryant in the summer of 2009.
Well, yeah, Zach, it was a very, very thorough process. Spent a lot of time in the years leading up, a couple years after I got the appointment, leading up to the 2010 games, just out there evaluating, especially the MLL talent. And then I was fortunate enough here to be in a situation at Bryant where our first couple years at Division One during that process, we were ineligible for the tournament. So, you know, at the close of my season was our last regular season game. So I had plenty of time in the summer, you know, around recruiting to spend, you know, just going to MLL games, watching them on TV, paying attention to the top flight college players. So, and not only myself, but our staff did too. And, you know, back to what you said about Richie Mead, I think Richie's going about this in a very, very professional, thorough process. I've been in touch with him a bunch of times. And, you know, he's actually probably even more extensive, as I see it, than we did in the summer of 08 and 09 evaluating the best players in our country. So, you know, we had a plan back then. Richie's got a great plan. He's following his plan, and I'm really, really excited about the list of players that he assembled and certainly the tryouts coming up here in a week or so.
How does that kind of factor in terms of, I mean, you know, obviously you're going to get a look at these guys up in the tryout itself, but, you know, as you said, you got to look at guys playing NCAA, playing MLL. I mean, how much do you kind of almost catalog what you're seeing them do in these other leagues or these other settings compared to what you see in the tryout? That way, you know, maybe if a guy doesn't have a great weekend of tryouts, you've already seen him do all this other stuff, and you can kind of think of that later in terms of his ultimate selection, or the opposite of maybe a guy hasn't done much all year in the NCAAs and MLL, and then all of a sudden has a great weekend of tryouts. You know, is that tryout an outlier, or is it kind of, I mean, there's, you know, obviously you don't want to shoehorn a guy into just what he does over one weekend, but you don't want to, you know, discredit that either, since you obviously you're bringing them up there to be evaluated like everybody else.
Sure. You know, that's why the beauty of it, Zach, there's a series of weekends. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, you look at the golf right now, the Barclays, you know, the FedEx Cup, you know, there's it's going to be 120 down to 70 and, you know, the next tournament, and very similar to what I think Richie was doing and what we're doing. And you know, you do early on, I think, you know, give some of those veteran guys maybe a little bit of benefit of the doubt. But I think you go back to the beginning. I mean, you know, how do you want your team built, Zach? I mean, for us, you know, our team was built basically to beat Canada. You know, we had a plan, our coaching staff, assemble a team, 23 men, and the best team that we could put together, not necessarily, again, the best group of players. I mean, this is not going to be an all-star team. And I think Richie, I don't want to put words in his mouth, feels the same way. So, you know, role guys that are very familiar with the Canadians, and obviously the Iroquois are back in the picture, as we all know, and they're going to be a very, very formidable team next summer. We all know that. But, you know, that's how, you know, that was the end result, putting together a team of 23 that we feel had the best chance to beat the Canadians, and then you kind of back up and go through the process accordingly.
So, you know, I guess with that in mind, of the specific kind of, you know, trying to beat the Canadians almost criteria in terms of trying to compose the Team USA, I mean, that idea of entering an evaluation process like this where you kind of have the selection criteria, I guess you could almost say, of what you're looking for, certain kind of guys you're looking for, how much of that is a discussion you have as a staff before even entering the tryout? That way you guys are all on the same page and kind of all know what specific things you might be looking for, so when you get together and try and make the cutdowns and the decisions, you're all kind of speaking the same language about what's important and what maybe isn't.
Zach, I think, and I go back to you know, the years prior to our, you know, picking our team eventually, we put so much emphasis on, you know, the personal qualities, the character traits, the issues there, the moral fiber, selfless attitude, national pride, your level of patriotism, and a lot of those core qualities were very, very important in selecting the tryout pool and eventually selecting the team. And, fortunately I had time to do a lot of homework, a lot of off the field interaction with those guys socially to get to know them better from that point of view, because, it was going to be, in our case, a team made up of specific roles, and guys had to, once their roles were determined, they had to buy in. And again, we all know Richie Mead, his years at the Naval Academy, very, very patriotic guy, wears his country's flag, on his sleeve and very proudly, as well as his entire staff. So, I know, in speaking to Richie, that he's going to take a lot of those same type of, qualities and, as he evaluates those players into consideration. And then I think the easy part is truly picking the talent there. I mean, we're all been in the game for a while, and that's why, you got a staff of four or five guys, and you evaluate your, you value your staff's opinion that way. So, all-star staff, Richie Beaton, those guys, they're going to do a heck of a job, and they're going to put the best team together eventually that gives us the best chance to win the gold again in 2014.
How much planning beforehand, or I guess even kind of once you land there, goes into structuring the whole trial process in terms of, I mean, when I was out there, mostly the guys were just kind of breaking into teams and playing the whole time. But, in terms of building those teams, are you just kind of making sure, okay, there's a couple attackmen here, a couple middies here, and you got enough guys on each team, or is it you're trying to put certain guys together on certain teams because you want to see how they play or don't play? I mean, over the course of the couple of days I was up at Bryan in 2009, it seemed like the guys mixed in that teams a fair amount, so you got to see, different combinations play together. But even beyond the games, I mean, is it a lot of planning even going to things like meals or like who's rooming with who or anything like that?
Well, I think U.S. Lacrosse did a great job doing a lot of the logistical stuff. In fact, the meals, our training camp was stellar here at Bryan, and obviously being here inside track and how this place works certainly helped. But, the roommate thing, we could tweak that a little bit. But I think, as I remember going back, the first day when we divided the teams up, it was very generic. There was no specific plan. But after each game, or each session, I should say, the coaching staff and the selection committee, we kind of came back, and then we started really evaluating who we wanted to see play with whom and who we wanted to see play against, each other. And so as the course of the weekend, grew, the planning was more extensive. And so by the end of the weekend, we felt we had seen all the combinations that we wanted to see, and there's two parts to that, who you play with and then who you play against. So as I look back on our time here, that was exactly the way, we went about it.
So I guess jumping to the guys being at camp, I mean, not to go too much into the 2010 process, but just one of the things I kind of wanted to talk to you about while I had the chance to was when I was talking to a lot of the guys from that tryout period, pretty much to a man, all of them addressed or pointed out the fact that, when they all got to campus, you kind of had a fairly poignant address with them in terms of, you know, what was acceptable, what you were looking for in this process, all those kind of things. And obviously that, that 2010 team was kind of in a unique situation in terms of, you know, they had just, the Team USA lost to Canada in 2006. So the 2010 process was very much about kind of revamping and getting the gold back and beating Canada. Can you talk a little about just what you were trying to accomplish in addressing the team like that, kind of bluntly like that at the beginning of tryouts?
Many faults here. You know, Zach and we know each other, you know, brutally honest at this end. And, you know, we were very, very upfront to the letter. We did not pull any punches with these guys. Very, very professional. You know, from the minute they stepped on campus, we were holding them to a high standard, both in, you know, not only in their play, but in how they handle themselves, you know, through the process there. You know, we wanted pros in every way, shape, or form of it. You know, and from that minute that they stepped on campus, even though they were trying out, they were representing the United States of America and all the things to go with that. So, you know, we wanted to set the tone. And then just from that first meeting, the level of organization. You know, everything was down to a T. I mean, from the entire day to you know, to the minute, to the second, to what, how they, you know, dressed, you know, from the meals to the meetings to the training room and all of that. And that was just an insight to those guys, you know, our group of 80 or so, how it would be when we eventually selected, you know, the group that would eventually go to Manchester, England.
To your knowledge, is that a kind of a fairly common practice in these kind of things where, you know, whenever the tryout or the training camp or whatever begins, the coach of that given year's squad, you know, kind of has that tight, that state of the union, almost kind of addressed everybody in terms of this is how it's going to be, this is what we're looking for, all that kind of stuff?
Well, that was it, Zach. That was our, that's our, I use that here, you know, at Bryan, you know, the state of the union. And, you know, and again, I was very fortunate because I was an assistant coach in 02. And, you know, I was on the staff with Coach Jack Emmer, and that was an amazing group of individuals in 02. We won the gold down at Perth, you know, a bunch of college guys. If you remember back then, the MLL did not allow their guys to play, you know, for in the World Games. So very, very unique group of guys, a lot of college guys, a lot of guys who came out of retirement. And we just had an unbelievable experience, you know, in Perth, and I was an assistant coach. And I was fortunate enough to not only play for Jack Emmer, but coach with Jack Emmer, and then be involved in the USA, you know, event with Coach Emmer. So I had just, you know, a boatload of experience to look back on. And that really, really helped me and guide myself and our staff and our group as we move forward in 2010.
So once you guys kind of have everybody on teams and then they break out and start playing these mini games, you know, how do you guys kind of delineate responsibility amongst the coaching staff? I mean, is everybody pretty much just told to go out to the field and kind of, you know, start evaluating and all that? Or are there a couple of guys kind of doing that and a couple other guys trying to handle some other aspect of what's going on, be it coaching the scrimmaging teams or anything like that?
Well, as our group, as I remember, we kind of had, you know, each coach kind of looking at a position. I remember, you know, you're looking at everybody, but I wanted Coach Alberici kind of concentrating on the attack guys, Rick Soule in the midfield. Coach Resch was looking at the D guys. We all kind of looked at the goalies. And then Paul Canabine, his job and one job only in the evaluation process was to find, you know, the best face-off guy. And, you know, Paul, that was a big thing that we didn't get done in 06 for whatever reason that we had to do in 2010. And Coach Canabine, you know, who's very, you know, is an outstanding, you know, college head coach at Stevenson, national champion now and all that. But for Paul, that's been his baby for as a player and as a coach, that face-off X. And, you know, he would determine in the end who our face-off guy would be and who the hybrid we would select. But, you know, we looked at everybody, Zach, but, you know, each one of us had our, you know, one eye on our, you know, specific position group.
With how much of kind of the you know checklist of things to look for in the 2010 team was based off the 2006 team, in some ways, you know, if Coach Meade were maybe to be trying to put together a similar checklist for himself for the 2014 team, I mean, you guys won gold in 2010, so I guess there aren't as many glaring weaknesses to try and look at and say, okay, we need to fix this and this. But, I mean, can you think of maybe things from the 2010 team that would influence the decision-making of or maybe, you know, important things to incorporate in a 2014 team?
Well, you know, looking back on, I just think in 2014, Zach, it's going to be even more competitive than it was in 2010. You know, and I mentioned, you know, a team was built to beat Canada, and that's no disrespect to any of the other teams there, but, you know, the Iroquois, for all the political reasons, didn't make it to England. You know, the Iroquois team in 2014 is going to be very, very formidable. The Canadian team is going to be even better, I think, than they were in 2010. I mean, a lot of those guys are coming back that are older. You know, Kevin Crowley's, you know, the MLL, you know, player of the year or wherever he won recently. Zach Greer, you know, Junior, you know, all those guys. They got some D guys now. And, you know, so I think Canada's better. Iroquois is going to be formidable. England's going to be better. Australia's going to be better. You know, so I think it's going to be a more competitive experience. But fortunately for us, in 14, it's on our home soil. You know, they're going to Denver as opposed to, you know, flying across the pond to England. So, you know, I think with that said, Richie and his staff is even more thorough than we were as I look back and try to compare. And then Richie and I have been great friends for years. We've talked many times, and he's kind of picked my brain as I picked others' brains as I got ready to get going in here. And again, at the end of the day, Zach, all-star coaching staff, you know, they're going to do a heck of a job. And, you know, at the end of the day, we're going to bring gold back to the U.S. in 2014. I have no doubt about that.
You know, in some ways, it sounds kind of like this trial process isn't that different than maybe going to a recruiting showcase and kind of, you know, there's just a lot of almost loose pickup action going on, but guys are playing hard because they realize, you know, that at any moment making a certain play, catching a certain eye, kind of, you know, might make an opportunity for them. I mean, but I guess kind of the parallel, or the interesting thing with that is a lot of times I hear coaches advising players that, you know, when you're at a recruiting event, coaches are watching everything you do. They're not just worrying about, you know, the play you make on the field. They're watching, is he a good teammate? Does he congratulate his teammates when he scores or when they score? Is he encouraging when he's not on the field or involved in the play? Is he, you know, watching still or participating or something like that? You know, does he seem selfish or selfless? How much of that stuff are you guys evaluating too? I mean, these are older players. You might know a little bit more of their reputations for that stuff. But in general, you talk about building a team and all that kind of stuff. I imagine you want to get guys more than just the super talented ones, but also guys that seem like they're good teammates and all that kind of stuff.
Zach, and again, I can't speak for Richie. I'm only guessing he's going to do a lot of the same, but that was us to a T again. You know, and again, I told the players to their faces that part of it was going to be huge in the evaluation process. And, you know, here's you go back to the recruiting, you know, scenario and the comparison there. You know, in Division I, you know, we have 40-man rosters. So, you know, if you make a recruiting mistake along the way and something happens, you know, a young man doesn't make it, you know, not only as a player, but, you know, doesn't produce academically, he's an issue socially, you know, you can absorb a mistake or two in the recruiting process. When you're selecting a 23-man team and, you know, you make a mistake that proves to come back to bite you, let's say, you know, in that selection of 23 and that guy doesn't pan out or whatever, you know, that's a much more greater mistake that's magnified even more because, you know, once the games begin even, you can't replace that player. You know, so when the games begin, you know, you turn your 23-man roster and that is it. You know, so if there's injury, if something happens or whatever, and you lose a guy or two, some of that stuff you can control, some of it you can't. You know, now you're really short. And again, go back to the tournament, Zach. It's you know, a little less than 2 weeks, and you know, you play, you know, 6-7 games there. You know, it's a tournament of attrition. You know, and you need, you know, not only do you evaluate talent, but you need guys in incredible physical condition. You need guys that take care of their bodies. You know, you need guys that can play, you know, bumped, you know, or bruised a little bit. And that's going to happen, especially as you play against the Canadians and some of those others. So, you know, as I think about, you know, getting ready for our conversation today, you know, that was a big part of it too. You know, just the stamina. You know, it's, you know, that once you get over there, it's a marathon. And, you know, you got to be ready to face, you know, all those types of adversities.
Has there been a consideration where you guys, or maybe even discussions with Richie, not to necessarily say you're speaking for Richie here, but you know, in terms of that idea of kind of seeing guys in incredible shape and guys that can maybe play a little hurt or something, you know, that beyond the gameplay that you see during a trial process, some kind of maybe physical evaluation or strength test, the way a lot of D1 teams maybe have, you know, their physical conditioning tests you have to pass at the beginning of the year or something like that. I mean, these guys are all professionals. You figure in a certain amount of shape, but in the same sense, is it good to maybe look into having something like that so you kind of have a baseline as a physical standard guys have to be able to meet?
You know, if anybody would have that, I think Richie Mead would. You know, I look back that we didn't do that necessarily, but you know, knowing Richie as he, you know, was very, very thorough, even more than I was a few years back, I would not be surprised if that's part of his, you know, that physical, those baseline tests maybe. But, you know, I go back to the tryouts, Zach, back, you know, the weekends. And, you know, you kind of evaluate as the tryout got going, you know, who was playing well and hard after the first event. You know, like, so you can kind of look at who is kind of fading, you know, as the thing goes forward and who is picking up momentum. I remember, you know, that hits me as a note right now as I think about it. That was something that, you know, we took a very, very hard look at, knowing that that would be in a very similar situation once we got over there, you know, in all those games in a short period of time.
Can you kind of give your impression of what the gameplay is like at the Team USA tryout process? I mean, I got to see it, and I thought it was really kind of a lot of fun to watch. It was almost a perfect mix of the looseness of kind of a pickup or scrimmagey kind of thing where guys are maybe pulling out some pretty ridiculous plays from time to time. But you could tell they weren't just kind of out there messing around because there was obviously a poignancy or, you know, the weight of realizing that how you play in these scrimmages is going to affect you playing on this national team or not. So guys weren't just throwing it between the legs, you know, for the hell of it or something. They were still trying to just make plays on the field to you know, make something happen, to draw a coach's eye, to do something like that.
Well, I think, Zach, I'm going back to my experience, okay? You got to remember, in the tryouts and those events, we played international rules. And we had referees that, you know, refereed accordingly. The international rules are very, very, very different than the MLL. And the number one probably is the shot clock, you know, and all of that. So there's no clearing lines like in Division I. There's no time limit. There's no clock that way. You know, defensively in the MLL, you know, it's a much more physical game. You know, so the defensemen, they go out there and start, you know, hacking up their guys. They're going to the penalty box in the international game. So not only did the guys have to try out and show their wares, but they had to adapt their game to the international rules. And that was much more difficult, as I remember, for some of them early on than others, per se. You know, to run down the field and get that shot off in a quick period of time. You know, when you play, you know, the Japanese, you know, they're going to hold it for 3 minutes. You know, so, you know, even in the tryout process, we try to make our guys aware of the differences, and they had to try out accordingly, you know, in those international rules. And for some of those guys, you know, it was a big change for them to adapt to and kind of change their game a little bit as well.
I gather that kind of influences the makeup of an overall team then in some ways too, that maybe crafting a team to play NCAA rules or MLL rules would look differently than crafting a team to play these international rules, maybe particularly on the defensive end, where it seems like guys with fantastic, you know, feet and cover skills, while that's always a big plus as a defenseman, that's even more important in the international game, where you really have to play defense with your feet because you can't go out and cross-check and you know, slash a guy and kind of physically impose defense on someone.
You know, and again, go back, as I said, back to international rules. They are so meticulous. I mean, if you're on the sideline, for example, and your toe is on the line, you know, an official from Australia could call you for, you know, too many men on the field. I mean, that's how to the point we were with our guys that way. You know, those short sticks that ride, those attackmen that ride, that swing their stick and you know, maybe slash a defenseman that nobody thinks is a foul, that is a foul in the international game. You know, in the international game, you got to play man up and man down pretty much with the people that are on the field, because the penalty time starts right away. So there's many, many rules that are totally different and totally unique that our guys never see but once every 4 years. And, you know, we just made a point, as Richie will, you know, we're trying out to play, you know, to form Team USA to play in the international level in the World Games under these rules and to have them try out or show the wares in any other set of rules just didn't make sense. And I remember, you know, we had actually the referees during the tryout did a couple clinics to explain to the guys, you know, the face-off, you know, is unique and different that way. You know, as I'm thinking about that, there's many, many others as well.
So you were talking about kind of when the break up and play these games, you know, you're looking for a lot of little things within the games. Maybe one of them is kind of how guys do against each other. You know, how do you kind of analyze those battles, maybe, you know, in terms of, okay, this is a big, strong middy that we like and we want to see how he does against, you know, a certain LSM or something who might be covering him in a given game or generally, you know, the way he reacts to how a defense plays. I mean, how do you just kind of handle those little battles maybe that may be telling in terms of, you know, evaluating a guy and if he makes a team?
You know, there's so much to that, Zach. You know, go back to, you know, the 23-man roster and, you know, how many attackmen do you take? You know, how many poles do you take? You know, you're going to take at least two goalies, you know, in the end. You know, you need at least one face-off guy and then one kind of hybrid guy. You know, a guy who could face-off, you know, in an emergency, but maybe he can play some short stick man down, you know, play in the second midfield. I mean, Stephen Pizer was that guy for us, and he was sensational, you know, in that role. You know, we took Chris Schiller as a pure short stick DM because he was so familiar with the Canadians in playing the indoor game, and he was invaluable to us. And not too many people heard of Chris Schiller that way. You know, you take a Ned Crotty, you know, as a guy who was a swing guy. You know, he can play attack. He can play midfield. Mike Lavelle, you know, in the same way. And I go back to, you know, defensemen that could play LSM and close. You know, attackmen that could play some midfield and still play attack. You know, some middies that would buy into, like Kevin Cassis and Chris Schiller did, into a short stick defensive middie role. You know, so, you know, picking your team, you know, you're thinking about all these things through the tryout process and who fits into, you know, your scheme and how we wanted to do it, you know, the best way. And I know Richie and his great staff will be certainly thinking about it. But again, their plan could be an entirely different too. In fact, there's no one plan. I think that the key thing for all of us is just have a plan, stick to your plan, and then eventually pick your 23-man roster with obviously all of that in mind.
The other side of that, then, I guess you mentioned is the guys who, you know, how guys play together. I mean, how difficult might that be in terms of trying to watch guys and then figure out what your best units might be in terms of, you know, you said it's not an all-star team. I mean, you might want to take the first, second, and third best attackman that you saw individually, but maybe the best unit is, you know, the first, the third, and the eighth best attackman, but they just play so well together. I mean, is it hard to kind of get those balances down and figure out, you know, this is our best unit, not necessarily this is our most skilled, you know, our three or five most skilled guys at that position?
Well, you're just thinking about, you hit a note with me, Zach, offensively here. You know, there's one white ball out there, and not everybody can touch it every time down on offense. So, as you build your unit, you know, you don't need or want, you know, three quote, carry guys or three X guys, you know, on the attack side of it. You need a great lefty. You know, you need a great, you know, right-handed shooter. You need a Dodger that way. You need that X guy. You know, and we might have taken one or two at each position, but as we built the team, we built each unit to complement each other. And I go back to the defensive end. You know, we needed to find out who was the best defenseman that could play junior. You know, and we had to have a defenseman that could do that, and also a person that could back him up and give junior another look. And then our guy turned out to be Sean Nadelin, and then Eric Martin, who was entirely different than Sean as a defenseman. We would use Verse Junior as in a different look that way. So, you know, in picking the team, you know, I think you're picking the units first, you know, and putting together the unit, and then, you know, that little subset, and then eventually that's going to all add up to, you know, we hope, a terrific group of 23.
Can you get a sense at all in the evaluation of how coachable any of the guys are, or how they respond to your staff? I mean, you know, from what I saw, it seemed like guys are mostly just kind of breaking into these teams and playing. There's not a lot of coaching going on. But I'd imagine you'd like some insurance in terms of knowing that, you know, the 40 guys, the 23 guys you eventually cut down to are guys that are going to be able to work with your staff and respond well to coaching and all that kind of stuff.
Well, I think the key thing, Zach, is just being around them. You know, like, for example, you're around them in meals. You know, how do they respond to the, you know, the staff in the dining hall? You know, how are they, you know, what's their interaction with your trainers and your doctors? You know, what's their interaction with each other? You know, how are they supporting, you know, the guys out there that they know and might not know, you know, when they do well or they don't do well? You know, how do people respond to that individual, you know, in particular when he does the same? So, you know, there's so many. I think the key thing is, you know, I spent so much time around him, you know, socially, you know, trains, planes, automobiles. I mean, and I'm talking about the tryout process as well. You know, sitting down and having a coffee with, you know, five or six guys in the hotel, you know, at 6 a.m., you know, getting ready for another tryout, and just talking lacrosse and talking about their families, talking about those kind of things. I think as you're around them more, the men more, you just have a better feel of who they are and maybe who they're not. And that was, again, as I said prior, just huge for us when we picked the final 23-man squad.
When you guys kind of, you know, wrap up each night at camp or tryouts, how much of the staff kind of sitting around and talking about the day, trying to, you know, make some basic evaluations there? I mean, by the end of the couple of days of tryouts, do you more or less kind of have a consensus of who the team's likely going to be? Or, you know, are you kind of working that out as the tryouts are going on? Or is most of that done about a week or so later when you can kind of remove yourself and sleep on it for a night or two and then get into really lengthy discussions about, you know, who's probably making it and all that?
Well, I just go back to yes and no. I think, you know, with each weekend, guys were kind of emerging. Some guys, for no better English, were de-merging that way. But we left it very – I wanted this to be, you know, a common theme amongst the coaching staff was, you know, at the end of the day when the Stony Brook event was over – we were going to go back into Coach Soule's conference room, and we were going to pick the team. I mean, we were down to 40. You know, we were going to get 23 out of that group, maybe with an alternate or two. We were going to stay however long it took to get that group selected. We were not going to announce. We're going to keep it to ourselves, sleep on it, and then, you know, go home, sleep on it, and then reconvene via conference call that Sunday morning, and if there were any changes in anybody's mind. And then once we all agreed this is the group of 23, you know, I got on the phone, and actually I called the first 17 that didn't make it. So you know, the 17 guys that didn't make the 23-man squad out of the 40, you know, got a phone call from me first. And those were obviously the toughest phone calls because it was so close that way. And then once I got through with that group, you know, I started with the 23-man squad and called those guys. And and you can only imagine how emotional, a lot of those calls were. But that was our plan, that we were not, we were going to stay open-minded to the very end, and make each tryout session pure that way, and try to stay as unbiased as we can, and then evaluate all the sessions as a whole on that final meeting at Stony Brook.
How democratic is kind of that selection process? I mean, you know, you were the head coach in 2010, so really, I would imagine that your word in some ways weighs a little heavier, or that there's, you know, kind of a deciding vote you can kind of come down, or, you know, I mean, how much of it is kind of a round table, you go around, you get a consensus, you make a decision, and how much of it is kind of, you know, since you're the head coach, if there's a feeling you have strongly, it can kind of weigh heavier in the process than maybe, you know, the sense of some other people down the line?
As I remember looking back, you know, during that meeting, Zach, I think pretty much everything we decided on was pretty close to a consensus. I mean, there was no time, as I can remember, where I like this said, this is what we're going with, and quote, it's my decision. I never did that. It was a collective decision at the end. Some guys were, maybe disappointed that this guy made it and that guy didn't. But at the end, when we all kind of raised our hand and went with, you know, each player, you know, as I remember, it was very, very close to being a consensus. But again, the input, was very democratic that way. I mean, Jimmy Butler, our equipment man, was in that room, you know, and when I asked him, you know, I needed some input, he was there for us. Billy Redmond, our GM, you know, his input when called upon was invaluable, because I trusted those guys and their opinions regarding these guys, because a lot of those kind of guys maybe even know the players individually and privately better than any of our coaching staff did. But at the end of the day, you know, as I remember when we did it, it was pretty much a consensus.
And, you know, I mean, obviously you guys won gold in 2010, so there maybe isn't much revision to be done in this. But I'm just kind of curious, you know, I feel like whenever people go through a big process like this, they can learn some things if they're afforded the next time. I mean, in terms of that experience for you of going through and selecting the team and then you know, playing with them over in Manchester and winning, I mean, there might not be a lot to do differently. But just having learned and done the experience once, would you, given the chance to do a training camp or something again, would you approach something like that differently? Or are there lessons that maybe you learned or figured out from the first time around that you think would be a little more helpful knowing going into a training camp scenario the next time?
I think there's a bunch of little things, as I remember. I don't think there's anything, in fact, that's very glaring. You know, and again, you know, I made mistakes. You know, we did win in the end, but looking back on it and you know, I know there's things that, you know, little things that I would have done differently, you know, if a year or two later, you know, per se. You know, I think it's going to be a much easier, you know, kind of mission for Richie doing it in Denver than you know, taking your team out of the country. I mean, that can be a logistic, you know, nightmare at times if things go wrong. Unfortunately, in our case, they did not. You know, going to Denver is going to be a lot easier, a lot less wear and tear on the guys. And you got to remember, I mean, a lot of these guys, you know, are married. A lot of these guys, you know, have children. You know, a lot of these guys are taking time off from their jobs and have to. So, you know, there's major league sacrifice, for those players. So, you know, it's a little less sacrifice, you know, when you're playing in Denver, I think, than if you are in Perth, Australia or Manchester, England. So, but again, at the end of the day, Richie and his staff, I mean, the future, the 2-4 team is in great, great hands. And again, Zach, I'm just so confident in Richie and his staff, and they're going to do the right thing here.
And I guess, you know, this is kind of maybe a funny way to put it in some ways, but, you know, typically when I talk to a lot of, you know, coaches or pro players about, you know, advice for younger kids, you know, that they'll have some good nugget to throw in. I mean, you're kind of addressing this more professionals here, but having run a training camp once, maybe for guys, if this is their first time out to a Team USA tryout, Is there advice you would impart? Are there certain things a player should or could be doing while at the tryout to improve his odds beyond just, you know, playing well?
You know, I go back to your analogy, back to the recruiting thing, and you know, you go on in the summer camps and tournaments and all, and you know, everybody, you know, those offensive guys that, you know, they get the ball and it turns out to be a black hole, you know, and they're just, it's all about them and their shot. And, you know, the defensive guys that, you know, want to impress people with the wow factor. And, you know, I think those things are the worst things you could do. You know, again, you know, and a lot of these guys that are trying out are coaches themselves. A lot of these guys are, you know, in their late 20s, early 30s. So there's going to be a lot of guys that were on the 06 team, the 210 team. You know, and I just think it's going to come down to that first meeting that Richie and the staff has and says, this is what we want to see. These are our overall expectations from this group. And, you know, this is the team that we're trying to put together eventually. And, you know, if you think doing this is going to get you on this team, you know, maybe, guys, you're mistaken here. And, you know, I keep saying that word, not to be too cliche there, Zach, is team. You know, it's not an all-star team. This is not the MLL All-Stars. You know, this is not the Division I North-South game. You know, this is a selection process and putting together the best team to win the 2014 World Championship. And, you know, you keep saying that word team, and then when you say it, you think about all the things to go with being a team. And each one of those guys that are trying out knows exactly what I'm talking about there. And I remember saying that very phrase to our group, you know, as we got ready in 2009 to pick the group. So, you know, again, you know, Richie's going to do it differently. Richie's going to do it well, and his staff, great. But I know Richie Mead very well, and team, for him too, is going to be a huge, huge part of this.
All right, well, Coach, thank you very much for letting me kind of pick your brain here on the selection process from 2010. I gather your Bryant team either back on campus or getting back there shortly?
We get back. Moving day is actually, I will not, unfortunately, be down at the tryouts. I decline Richie's offer, regrettably. Our freshmen move in a week from tomorrow, and, you know, we have a reception here, actually, for the freshmen and their parents. And, you know, we start school on the Tuesday after Labor Day. But I got my Kevin Massa down there in the face-off pool, and he's actually here at Bryant training right now to get ready to go down to the tryouts. So, you know, again, Zach, Richie Mead and his group is going to do a heck of a job. And unfortunately, I won't be there, but I'm really looking forward to speaking to Richie afterwards and picking his brain and how it went.
All right, well, Coach, you know, thank you very much, and best of luck when Bryant gets in. You guys get through the fall, and hopefully, you know, a belated congratulations, I guess, on making the first tournament in Bryant's history this past spring, and hopefully we'll see you guys making a handful of more appearances over the next couple of seasons here.
My pleasure, Zach. Zach, thank you.
Take care.